This is Wine, Women, and Revolution with your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Wine, Women, and Revolution. I'm your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. You can find us online at www.njrevolutionradio.com. Get us wherever you get your podcasts from and follow us on all the social medias. In my tradition of what I like to do, I often like to bring you badass socialist women, and I think I have one of the most badass socialist women that I know today with me, Andrea Merida. She's was the co-chair of the Green Party of Colorado. You were one of the five steering committee members for the Green Party National. You know, all around general badass, and I'm happy to have you here today.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. But let me correct you very quickly. I'm still the co-chair of the Green Party of Colorado. I just termed out of more than 4 years on the National Steering Committee as a national co-chair.
That's a lot. Yeah. How long have you been the co-chair of Colorado?
Oh, I think it's about 4 years as well.
Okay.
And I'm running for re-election, so.
Oh, okay. When's that election?
This is going to be next month.
Okay. Oh, and also, in addition to all that, if that wasn't enough, she's also a fairly awesome musician. You have a band, Gumbo La Funk.
Yeah. You know, it's a band that my husband and I have, and we both love funk. And, you know, we're both, music majors. We met in music school, and I actually have a background in classical voice and, you know, sang in a little, like, you know, localized opera and stuff like this. And but I love funk. I mean, I'm from the barrio. So, you know, we decided that we were going to do this, and it's fun. And, you know, it's a great band.
And how long has your band been together?
Oh, gosh. This band probably was getting on for 9 years now.
Oh, wow. That's some longevity for a band.
Exactly.
All right. So I wanted to start kind of, I often refer to it as people's origin stories because, you know, you're all kind of superheroes in my mind. So have you always been someone that's politically engaged, or did something really get you engaged in politics?
I have to say yes. I mean, I hearken back to the fact that I'm a daughter of immigrants. I'm actually a daughter of political refugees from Guatemala. And I was born in the United States. And so struggle and survival under capitalism has always been stuff that I grew up with, you know. And, my father allowed us to have good Catholic school education, but he always counterposed it and counterbalanced it with, you know, I grew up reading Marx. I grew up doing, Das Kapital study groups when I was a kid. I also, you know, he was very engaged in political activity, too, when I was a kid. And, I remember being a little kid and carrying picket signs when the Coors workers here in Colorado wanted to unionize and, you know, picket on the picket line in support of their bid to unionize. You know, picketing in front of the local power utility company, when they were, shutting off power in Denver, Colorado in the winter, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, for really primarily the poorest neighborhoods and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think I've always been very politically active. I always say that because I come from revolutionary parents, I don't know how to be subjugated. Right. And so nice. It comes out in a lot of different things. And, you know, I did go into a little lull when I had my son. I went through that same kind of right wing, you know, phase that every kid does, every revolutionary kid does. And I joined the military, you know, and I had my son when I was 19 while I was in the military. Of course, my dad was not happy about that because he was also a Vietnam War protester.
And right, right.
He couldn't, you know, and we came from, you know, the political activity that he ran away from in Guatemala was like the launching of the School of the Americas and the secret police trainings and things like this. And so he just, you know, needless to say, it wasn't a positive time. And, you know, I grew up and I got to see for myself really what the world was like outside of, you know, away from my dad's apron strings, I guess, if you want to say it that way. And, you know, I just kind of recaptured my Marxist-Leninist roots, and that's where I am today. So
you realize dad was right all along, really.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. And my dad is one of my biggest heroes. He's also one of my biggest cheerleaders. You know, I have a really strong bond with my dad. And you know, my mom passed away about three years ago. And you know, I'm just a little acorn off of that tree right there, you know, because I mean, this is a woman that, you know, an immigrant woman and having to really, you know, push and work several jobs to survive under capitalism and had three kids and, you know, just made it happen. And so I'm just a little acorn off of those trees.
You think your badassery was probably passed down genetically. It's just in your genes, right?
I think so.
So, you know, we've talked a little bit about how you're involved in the Green Party. When did you come to the Green Party and how did you make that decision?
Yeah, so I was actually a registered Democrat and I was serving on the Denver School Board. I had been elected to the Denver School Board, and it's a nonpartisan race, but it's just like any urban city, it's kind of like a closed shop for the Democrats. And so I got on there, and, you know, of course, I've had this political background. I had this leftist orientation from the beginning. And I really thought at that time that, you know, the Democrats could be something good. and was on that school board and watched this intense privatization and union busting that was being carried out by the hands of people that were registered as Democrats. And in addition to, you know, just kind of the inculcation of systemic racism within the schools and that sort of thing. And I had experiences in which, you know, I was representing a district, not only in my elected position, but as a Democratic apparatchik, representing a district that was nearly 70% Latino, many people bilingual, if not monolingual Spanish. And I would have experiences like, hey, well, why don't we do this door hanger bilingual? Well, no, we can't do that. Well, how about we just do the titles? No, we can't do that. And when I would push it, I would be told that I was racist against white people when I had a particular constituency that I had to represent, right? So I was coming into that seat, having these experiences with the Democratic Party, and then seeing them privatize schools, seeing them resegregate schools through charterization. You know, in Denver, the charter school is the test factory. It's the kill and drill factory, zero tolerance factories. And those are specifically focused on kids of color. And I fought very hard against the privatization. I watched too as the superintendent at that time, Michael Bennett, who's now our senator from Colorado, basically took the teacher's pension and put it on the open stock market. And if you've ever seen the movie, the Big Short, mm-hmm. and the interest rate swaps instruments that they're talking about, well, he put our teacher pensions into that. And so I fought very hard while I was on the school board, you know, to try to save that, because when people pay their property taxes, you know, they intend for teachers to have a pension. They want something to be there for them. And, you know, we managed to save the teacher's pension and, you know, took $640 million out of the teacher pension assets out of the hands of Goldman Sachs. And, you know, and of course, it's still in, you know, among in the hands of banksters, but at least we stabilize it. So it was out of that interest rate swap. And so I'm sitting there watching all of this stuff go on, and I'm just not happy with it. And it's to my core, I can't reconcile why this is okay. And the Green Party in Colorado at that time, this was about 2012, 2013, was very, I don't know, shall we say, very sheltered. And it was really just this little nucleus of maybe 20, 30 people around the state, you know, environmental minded, mostly white people that had never really been challenged on some of these things and never had to perform because they themselves were not all that not privileged. Right. You know, they didn't have the economic and the social impetus to really work for change. Right. And so I encountered them. You know, I was persuaded by the national platform, which was really good, which was from the beginning. It's always been strong against privatization of schools and pro unions. And I thought that was the place to go. And, you know, I switched to the Green Party very publicly while I was still serving. I actually have the distinction of being probably the Colorado school board member, probably most covered in the Colorado media. Right. And so it was like this big old thing that I switched to the Green Party and just been working at it ever since. And, you know, and the Green Party is imperfect. You know, a lot of us are showing up with the traumas that we face in capitalism. But I think that everybody in the Green Party is committed to the idea that we must have an independent left workers party, and it must stand separate from the Democratic Party, because I don't want to make those decisions anymore. I don't want to have to find logic in what capitalists within the Democratic Party are doing. They're hurting my people. And when I say my people, I mean not just Latinos, I don't mean just children of immigrants, but I also mean the working class as well. So I'm not going to do it anymore. And that's it.
It's amazing how much things are, you know, you may not know that in other states, like this is mainly a New Jersey focused show, how similar things are happening across the country, you know, like especially with the school privatization. That's something that I've definitely been opposing to. And, you know, we have Cory Booker, the king of privatization,
exactly.
That comes
and
out
his
of New
Facebook
Jersey.
Money.
Right. And now he's, you know, is trying to take that agenda to being a president, and it directly harmed people in Newark. And down here in South Jersey, we see, you know, there's the Norcross machine, which is the Democrat machine, which is, again, bringing in these charter schools into cities like Camden, trying to get rid of public schools entirely in the city of Camden. So I think it's possible that this is happening. You know, the same thing is probably playing out in every single state, even if we don't know people specifically that are talking about it. I think you see the same challenges with the Democratic Party playing out across the country. And, you know, that's a lot of why I became green. And this was not one of the questions I specifically intended to ask you, but something I noticed was I also came out of the Democratic Party. And as soon as you break from the Democratic Party, you actually get a lot more powerful. You find a much stronger, you've experienced that as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I'm a pretty resolute person to begin with. And once I've made up my mind about something, that's it. We're over, because I've put the thought into it. I've weighed it out in my moral core and my conscience, and we're ready to go. But I just kind of felt like at that point that slings and arrows wouldn't hurt me anymore, you know, to kind of coin the biblical phrase. And, you know, even the charges of the spoiler that we get sometimes in the Green Party, I don't care. I don't care. Because it's like, look, you want to talk to me about being a spoiler, but Hillary Clinton got 3 million more votes than Trump. So why doesn't anybody ever say those are wasted votes, those 3 million extra votes that she got more than Trump? I mean, so it's just illogical. And so I know why I'm doing it. I'm resolute. It speaks to my values, and I'm just going to be unshaken from it. So.
And do you see yourself having more of an impact too? Like actually crafting and influencing policies that directly relate to people like you, you know, the working class, the non-privileged, the,
right,
you know, like, I kind of felt like when I was part of the Democratic Party, no one wanted to hear my voice at all,
right,
you know, and so now it's often very refreshing of like, oh yeah, you know, like these are things that we can do. We actually can make conditions better.
Yeah, I don't believe that the people in the Democratic Party, the rank and file, are actually listened to at all. I mean, if you see how, you know, when you start talking about why you're agreeing to rank and file Democrats, you can see it in their faces. They kind of like, they agree with you. And their only response to you is, but we want to win. And it's like, what exactly? You know, I mean, we have to tear the system down, you know, and it's really interesting to watch people's metamorphosis mentally, just even on their faces when you're having these conversations with them, you know. And but the Democratic Party does not listen to its rank and file. You know, my husband served in the Colorado Democratic Party platform committee, and it was like this little, you know, the state legislators that were Democrats were nominal members of this committee, and it was like this little mushroom committee nobody paid attention to. The moment they decided to run a platform plank and change the Colorado State platform in favor of pushing the borders back from Israel so that Palestinians could have a more just, you know, and stop the violence against them and stuff like this. The moment that they started to do that, then all of a sudden, all of these legislators who had been on the trips funded by AIPAC to Israel, then they started showing up. And my husband was going to have this firefight in the floor of the state convention for the Colorado Democratic Party. And, you know, he's going up against the speaker of the Colorado House and this and that and the other. And, you know, and finally they ended up having to back down because the grassroots was, you know, the rank and file was able to prevail. But boy, they don't care until it starts, you start messing with their funding, right?
Right.
That's the reality.
So your husband's actually, you know, very political too. You haven't talked about him too much, but yeah. He's definitely involved as well.
Yeah, he is. You know, he's a member of the Denver Green Party local as well. And, you know, we're both very active in the local activist scene. You know, we are kind of like a couple of people that we really seek non-sectarian relationships with people on the left here. And so we're kind of, I would say we're kind of seen as the peacemakers between, like, say, anarchists and the former ISO and the Trotskyist people that are here, as well as, you know, some of these other, left-leaning immigrant groups and this and that and the other. And we've tried to do, not just he and I, but people in the Denver Green Party as well. We've tried to posture ourselves as the bridge between, you know, all of the different, you know, we've got PSL here as well. And we're comrades with all of them, you know, because we really want to work toward a non-sectarian left. So
real left, you know, unity. Yeah, that's the.
Yeah.
So I did want to get into, you know, you seem to either inspire people to love you or to hate you. Clearly, I'm in team love you.
Oh, thank you. I love you too.
When, you know, where do you think, why do you think you cause such a divide in people? Is it just people don't like their white supremacy challenge?
Well, you know, I think that we all need to be, on the left especially, you know, we need to be very honest about the level at which white supremacy and colonization has really impacted us. And we have to really challenge the notions that we have about human beings. And I think, you know, I said earlier that I wasn't raised to be subjugated. I don't know how to be subjugated. And I'm an extremely confident person, right? And I look like a Latina. I am a working class person. I'm very proud to do that. And I think that I really ruffle the feathers of people who expect Latinas to be docile and do the housework and, you know, and oh, I'm not racist because, you know, I'm nice to you kind of a thing. And it's like, that's great if you can have some interpersonal politeness toward me, but what are your really, are your deep seated attitudes towards people like me? You know, do you, it's kind of like, and I'm going a little bit afield and I'm going to reel this back in, but it's sort of like sometimes when you hear liberals talk about immigrants, they're like, oh no, we should love everybody because immigrants hold up the, you know, they do the jobs that nobody wants to do. That is inherently a racist thing to say, because what you're saying is that my function as a person of Latin American descent is only to prop up your economic system. In other words, you have accepted capitalism in your heart and your mind and understanding that some people are here to be exploited, right? What you're not given to me is the human right to immigration, right?
Right.
So
right.
It's kind of like, it's what we have in the Green Party a lot of times are people that haven't reconciled that issue. And they've never seen a Latina who is a socialist, shit, a Marxist-Leninist, who is not ever going to back down, you know. And I'm not an evil person. And I'm not, you know, I'm a very compassionate person. When Che Guevara says that, you know, at the risk of seeming ridiculous, revolutionaries are guided by great feelings of love. I feel that, and I'm a Christian on top of it. I mean, I am a practicing Catholic, and so. You know, I see each individual as you know, as a gift, you know, and they're all blessed. And I have a responsibility to be, you know, good to them and this and that and the other. But sometimes I also have to be good to myself. And sometimes people don't understand that me standing up for myself is not anything against you, but I have a right to stand up. Right. And so if you come from a liberal perspective, liberals, and you know, I always say this, liberals are fundamentally authoritarian, right? If you do not believe that I have the right to stand for myself, then you're going to have a problem with Andrea Merida, right? And because I'm going to stand for myself. I'm going to put things out on the table. You know, I don't attack people, but I'm very frank about things, right? And there are people who are not ready to deal with that. Plus, there are people in the Green Party that don't want us to be a socialist party. And so it's, you know, even though there are other people, you know, like my former SC colleague, Gloria Matera, for example, who is Italian-American, and who is also an avowed socialist, you know, she doesn't get the focus that I do. It's easier to look at me because of their deep-seated stuff. And I recognize what's going on. And then, you know, I get a lot of attacks online and this, that, and the other by people who have never talked to me in their lives. They don't know who I am. They wouldn't be able to pick me out in the crowd. They're just, you know, we do have a fair amount of trolls, you know, so, and it's also coming from people that don't understand that we in the party have rules and processes. And they assume that I'm going to be just like anybody else and be corrupted. And I'm not. I know what the rules are and I follow those rules. And my attitude towards the rules we have in the party is, if you don't like them, change them, use the democratic process to change them. And we have done that. You know, so
right in Colorado, for example, you definitely started focusing more on dismantling white supremacy and on elevating feminism. Like, we have a set of 10 key values in the Green right. Party, and not everybody always upholds them all the same.
Right.
Some get kind of ignored. And you, when you came into power, definitely sort of changed that dynamic of these are important values here. I'm going to uphold them.
Well, I expect those ten key values to apply to everyone. And I want to create a space in at least in the Green Party of Colorado, in which if you're still working through that stuff, that's fine. Let's put it on the table. Let's be honest. I'm going to be compassionate with you because I also know that the discrimination that you might be doling out on others is a lot of times it's unintentional, right? It has to do with conditioning under capitalism. So I'm not going to attack you as a human being about it. But if you cross the line with me, then we have to deal with it. Right. So, you know, and I get a lot of static about basically what happened in Colorado. And long story short, we had sexist people who were using white supremacist attitudes and, you know, postures and stuff like that toward me. I was fine when I wasn't in the co-chair seat. But once I did, it was crazy. And I'm the first Latina to hold the Green Party of Colorado co-chair seat ever in the history of Green Party of Colorado. You know, and I knew that we weren't living up to our potential, you know, and there were a lot of people who held very nativist, anti-immigrant, you know, there's people in the Green Party of Colorado who former chairs, for example. I mean, this one guy runs a blog that talks about how we have to stop immigration. Otherwise, our environment is going to be torn up like they have in Latin America, you know, without even talking about the colonization and the, I mean, it's crazy, right? You know, and so this is the kind of stuff that we had to deal with in Colorado. And, you know, I knew that those people weren't going to be amenable to moving themselves a little bit leftward, looking at these social kinds of things. So I'm a very effective organizer, I have to say. And this is one of the things that pisses people off about me, because I do get the job done. And, you know, I got good comrades in, you know, I helped launch a few new locals, and they were, you know, full with anarchists and socialists and communists, you know, and who were very much opposed to oppression, you know, and internalized white supremacy and doing that work in their own right. And then it kind of came to a head because my former co-chair at the time was so frustrated with me because of my organizing and stuff, literally threatened to hit me. I mean, it's, we have it, you know, we have, you know, audio recordings, we have screenshots of, you know, of him, you know, basically copying to it and this and that and the other. And so this, you know, it really came to a head around the 2016 election. And the male co-chairs, local co-chairs, when you're a female co-chair and you're supposed to be sort of like the conflict resolver for everybody else, I mean, who is it that, who do you go to, right?
Right.
When you're the one at the top, who do you go to? So I mentioned what had happened to me to a couple of the male local co-chairs. And so the male local co-chairs decided to recall this co-chair, and they were nearly successful. And then he resigned in the middle of the proposal period. Right. And then it kind of just blew up there from there, because then it was like me lying and, you know, my husband was a witness to his threat. I mean, got right in my face and, you know, this sort of thing like this. And of course my husband had to be lying because we were associated and this and that and the other. So, you know, we ended up changing, we dealt with that. We've had to deal with a lot of attacks and smears. There's a lot of really crazy, you know, attacks about me out there, you know, whatever. But what we do have in Colorado as a result is an explicitly anti-capitalist and anti-oppression state party. And people of color and transgender people and all kinds of different people and working class people are very comfortable to organize in our space because we've created a safe zone for them.
You've really transformed Colorado. And yeah. I think that people that fall into the love you category see the work you've done and the transformation. And, you know, I want to say the Green Party's not perfect. We are made up of people. People have a lot of work to do to dismantle the society they're raised in. You know, we're a product of the society we're raised in. But the Green Party is making amazing progress. I think that's important to stress, that we're really the party is transforming into a very serious force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, you know, I really got to hand it to the comrades that are in the party right now. I mean, you all in New Jersey are one of my, you all are one of my favorite parties. You know, because you just came in there and you said, no, we're red, we're here, you're going to have to deal with it, right? And so there are many state parties. There's Alabama, I want to call out, you know, there's great comrades in Missouri. There's, I'm missing lots of people. Oh, you know, definitely there was a contingent in Texas, for example. And, you know, we're, as working class people, we need to take breathers and we need to take rests because our lives are very tough in the first place. And, you know, we just need to regenerate, that sort of thing. But I also want to hand it to the liberals in the party that are really recognizing the wave and understanding finally that the 10 key values are absolutely not achievable under capitalism. They're just not, you know, and they're deciding to meet us halfway. And maybe they still have some sort of a romanticized notion about their own potential to become capitalist or wealthy themselves. But they also see the writing on the wall, right? So I want to give a shout out to those liberals that meet us halfway there. But you know, we're getting stronger. You know, in the areas where there are a lot of socialists, eco-socialists, that's where, oh my God, like North Carolina is on fire right now. You know, with the excellent candidates that come out of there. And so, you know, and what it comes down to is that when you have a group of people who have a material interest in trying to make change, right, be it because of their social or their political situation, economic situation, but also because maybe they understand things from a particular ideological bent. When you have people who have an impetus for material change, you're going to get the change. You know, so it's exciting to sit back and watch this stuff happening.
Well, I think that leads me really well into my next question of what does the ideal society look like to you? What are you fighting for? What do you want to see when we're done with the struggle? Are we ever done with the struggle?
I don't think that we're going to be done with the struggle even after we defeat capitalism, because we still have to decolonize ourselves from some attitudes, right? And there's going to be a period, you know, I want to see a communist society. I want us to see us actually get there. I want to see full emancipation of the woman, and that includes the transgender woman. I want to see full emancipation of the working class. You know, I want economic democracy. I want a safe, clean environment. I want us to be able to produce only what it is that we need and for us to have a democratic decision on what that is. You know, so I, you know, that's fairly utopian, but, you know, I think it's achievable. I don't know if we'll achieve it in my lifetime, but I'm certainly going to be building those blocks so that we can get there. You know, I just had a granddaughter about a month and a half ago. And I'm thinking forward for what I'm going to leave behind for her. So I'm just going to keep swinging at it, and organizing and building, rebuilding the left so that we can achieve it.
This is a question I ask a lot of guests. Do you consider yourself an optimist?
Oh yeah, I'm very much an optimist. You know, I understand that the odds are long and the stakes are high, the road is long. But I have confidence in us. I have confidence in the working class, because all these years of trying to survive under capitalism has made us strong, and we're ready, and we're resilient, we're creative. the fact that we can even generate profits at all under this predatory capitalist system is 100% a testament to our abilities. And so I have so much confidence in us that we can do this. And it's exciting to me. I'm giving myself chills right now thinking about it. We're ready.
And I also want to talk about like what we're doing right here. We're a couple of women sitting and talking about communism openly. And like, so it shows things are changing. Like I'm publishing this on my media company. That's an anti-capitalist media company. Like we're making progress for sure.
Yeah. You know, and I want to give a shout out to DSA, you know, and Bernie Sanders definitely, even though he himself does not directly talk about socialism, right? There are people like that, there are elements like that that are making it easier for us to have these open conversations, right? You know, we're still going to be attacked. We're, you know, especially as women of the left, there are liberal men in particular, because right wing men, at least they kind of will leave you alone for the most part. But liberal men like to come at us and tell us what we should say and what we can't say, you know. And so we're always going to have to be opposing that sort of element. But yeah, it's a lot easier. And we have to give credit where credit is due, you know. So,
yeah, I mean, Bernie Sanders did just mention class warfare. Like a recent statement, like the conversation is changing. And I think that's important. And speaking of changes, you're no longer one of the national co-chairs. You have a new job in the Green Party.
I do.
You are the campaign manager for Howie Hawkins. Now, I know I'm supposed to be an unbiased journalist here and say, you know, there's a lot of excellent candidates, but I'm in Team Howie camp right now. And
Thank you. Yeah. I'm really excited to be working with Howie. I mean, he's as a younger green leader, he's someone that I've always looked up to. I mean, Howie is extremely unequivocal about the fact that we need an independent working class party of the left. It's not even up for debate. And this is what I love about it. He's just so open about it. He's an excellent organizer. You know, he's a longtime activist on various issues. And he's an unapologetic socialist, and he has been the whole time. And it's funny because when we have these discussions in the Green Party, you know, and you've seen on the national level where there is really strong liberal opposition to socialists being in the party, where we actually have people that are like, well, you know, If you're a socialist, why don't you join the Socialist Party? And of course, my response to that is always, well, because I'm registered green in Colorado. So, you know, that's why. But they have this attitude that we shouldn't be there. And Howie Hawkins is a testament. He's been there since the beginning. He was there since the first organizing meeting in St. Paul, Minnesota in 1984. So I think we need to take a lot of example from Howie. You know, he has been there working alongside these liberals for all these years, and here he is. He's running for president, and I think he should be. So
how's Team Howie campaign coming along?
Oh man, you know, we're still pulling it together. One of the things that Greens don't have is a lot of electoral experiences, but this team that we have, including myself, consists of people that were working on the Jill Stein campaign. So they are coming to the battle very prepared, you know. We have a really great team. We have a lot of volunteers. We have a lot of systems set up. You know, I'm very proud of our website. I'm proud of the, you know, organizing that we've got going on. We've got a really strong ballot access and matching funds program. You know, we're showing up to help out with ballot access in states where we don't live. You know, Howie sets the example. In New York, there are sometimes where you had to go out and collect petitions to get on the ballot. And, you know, he's putting his money where his mouth is as a candidate by going out and doing the work himself. And he's going to be in Arizona next week for several days. And one of the main things he wants to do is go out and collect signatures. I mean, he's even registered with the Arizona Secretary of State so that he could be legally allowed to collect signatures alongside the Arizona Greens.
Wow.
I don't see this level of commitment to building the party from the other campaigns, I have to say, but that's all right. I mean, Howie knows the stakes.
Yeah. And, you know, there are a lot of campaigns and, you know, hey, if you want to reach out and come on NJRR, you know where I stand, but, you know, I'm willing to bring other voices on. But, you know, I'm really impressed with the work that you guys are doing on Howie's campaign. And, you know, I'm, you know, not very secretly hoping he's the nominee.
Well, you know, we're going to work for it. You know, we believe in having to state our case, and we're not assuming that anybody's just going to, you know, give Howie support. You know, we're going to have a conversation with Greens, and we're going to state our case because they deserve that respect. We don't feel entitled. It doesn't really matter, you know, in the final analysis, whether he was at that first meeting or not, even though he was. We still have to give each Green the respect of convincing them to support this campaign. So, you know, we're not calling it a done deal. It's not a fait accompli. We're going to work for it because that's what socialists do, you know?
All right. So we're about out of time for today. We've gone a little bit over, but that's okay. Do you have any final closing words before we close it out today?
Well, I would just say that, you know, women of the left in the Green Party, stand up, you know, use your voice. Like the saying goes, even if it shakes, because you know you're doing the right thing, you know that you're doing this thing for the good of humanity, and try to be compassionate with other women and other people who are on the right of you, and try to understand that they're trying to decolonize themselves from capitalism. But you just keep on and look for other women on the left and find your community there, because we're going to get this done.
All right. Thank you so much for being here today. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you. Likewise.
To my listeners, thank you so much for joining us here today. We are here to be the voice of the activist community. Whether you're left or even farther left, we're here for you. So, and even, you know, the occasional liberal, I think you're welcome here too. But, you know, we are here for people that are trying to make change in the world, that have a vision of something better that they want to put into place. And to that goal, we take no corporate money. We cannot be a voice for the activist community if we take corporate money. So we do have to ask you go onto our website if you can, www.njrevolutionradio.com, and click on that donate button. Even if it's only a couple of dollars a month, you can support us on Patreon, you can support us through PayPal, and we appreciate you. We appreciate everything you do. The future's yours to create. Go out there and create it.